Rev by W.L. George.
"And that," said Mr. Wallingham, "is the end."
"May I congratulate you, Mr. Wallingham," said Miss Medhurst. "I'm sure it will be a great success, like all your novels."
Mr. Wallingham leant back in his armchair, fingertips joined, staring at the ceiling with a certain complacency. He was a shortish, stoutish man, aged about 40, with a rosy complexion, well-kept hands, and a neatly clipped moustache. Upon his mouth lingered a little private smile, as if he were listing in his mind past triumphs. Mr. Wallingham was successful. Mr. Wallingham looked successful. Still, at that moment, Mr. Wallingham was conscious of some uneasiness, a sense of, how could he put it, secret criticism? He felt as if he were not alone, as if something faintly hostile stood by his side. "I will read you the last page," he said. "Oh," she gasped, "please do." A faint flush rose in her pale cheeks as she grew conscious of her own excitement. Miss Medhurst was of indeterminable age, between 30 and 40. She was small, thin, with little features that had once been pretty. Her eyes grew large and soft as she gazed upon the man whose secretary she had been for 10 years. Mr. Wallingham cleared his throat and read.
"The six men stood undecided about the long shape that lay upon the ground. It was as if they feared to touch that sumptuously wild buccaneer, heavy-breeched, scarlet-sashed, so dark and fierce and beautiful, lest the slightest movement should release the mortal spark that lingered still in the faintly heaving breast. At last Moreno spoke. 'We cannot leave him here,' he said. 'The sun is too hot.' Indeed, from the purple vault above, the Mexican sun felt like a heavy hand, and the air was filled with the buzzing of insects. The air was crowded with life. Moreno, pitiless and crime-stained, felt his heart grow big and painful as he thought that nature was filled with life, yet could not afford another hour to Perez. Perez, the man without fear, his comrade who lay there dying. 'Come,' he said gently, 'let us carry him into the house.'"
Mr. Wallingham continued, totally engrossed in his rendition.
"A few minutes later, they stood a little away from the bedside. Perez breathed more hurriedly. He grew yet paler, and Moreno stepped forward, an anguish upon him. Then, for one moment, his comrade opened his eyes, those soft, lustrous eyes. His lips twisted into a crooked smile, as for the last time he met the gaze of Moreno. But, very slowly, his head sank down and was still. Thus he lay, his dark face sharp outlined against the pillow, as an ancient bronze, black beard erect, in death defiant as in life. Moreno fell upon his knees. 'Goodbye, Eagle Heart, goodbye,' he cried. One by one, the others stole away. Perez lay still and aloof. And his soul, winging its way through space, carried as a last memory the sound of his comrade's weeping."
Miss Medhurst did not move. Her eyes were dim, for she too loved the eagle-hearted buccaneer. So she did not notice that as Mr. Wallingham pronounced the last word, he started so violently that his knees rapped against the desk. For Mr. Wallingham had distinctly heard a voice, a loud, indignant voice, and what it said was, "Nonsense."
"Oh, it's wonderful," murmured Miss Medhurst, "wonderful. But why must Perez die? I suppose it's artistic truth, and..."
"Miss Medhurst," said Mr. Wallingham, in a voice suddenly metallic and laboured, "if you don't mind,
I won't do any more today. I'm not very well.
She bent forward with quick sympathy.
Oh, yes, of course. Work like yours takes all your strength. I'll go. Oh, please, please, Mr. Wallingham, rest. Go into the park, and I'm sure a tonic...
Mr. Wallingham was not listening. He sat with clenched hands. When Miss Medhurst said, "Why must Perez die?" a voice had grumbled, "He didn't." For a long time, Mr. Wallingham sat with his face in his hands. "How can you be so absurd?" he asked himself. "You let yourself become the prey of your nerves just because you're a little overworked. Old Medhurst is right. She's been at me for months to take a rest. Anyhow," Mr. Wallingham suddenly grew defiant and addressed the wall. "Speak up! Now's your chance. I'm listening." There was no reply, and, nearly comforted, Mr. Wallingham got into his evening clothes and went to his club. That night he slept almost at once, and awoke the next morning to find that his valet had gone out, leaving by his side his letters, the newspapers, and the morning tea. "Oh," he thought as he stretched, "I feel better," and began to drink his tea. Then, quite suddenly, the cup fell crashing and unnoticed to the ground. A man was standing at the foot of his bed, looking at him with a disagreeable expression. Mr. Wallingham made a violent effort to speak, but found his tongue palsied. Then a voice, the familiar voice that had haunted him, grew audible. "Well," said the shape, "surprised to see me, I suppose." Mr. Wallingham did not reply. "You've given me a lot of trouble," the thing went on. "Materializing isn't as easy as you novelists make out. When I think of the weeks of bother I've had over this business, I've a good mind. Still, that's not what I've really come for. Wallingham, that ending of yours is nonsense. Pure bunkum."
"What do you want?" asked Mr. Wallingham feebly, for this insult to his literary powers galvanized him.
"I want you to alter the ending, and you'll do it, sure as my name's Perez."
Mr. Wallingham still stared at the thing. Perez! He had known at once that tall, black-bearded shape with the lustrous dark eyes, had recognized the full trousers and the scarlet sash, his buccaneer. But this was awful. Was he going mad?
"Did 33 Dotion fail effectively? But I'm not a respectable character. You made me like that, and if I killed Mercedes, it's your fault."
"Well, I like your cheek," said Mr. Wallingham.
"Don't interrupt," grumbled Perez. "With her savings, I went to Mexico City and bought myself a small saloon at number 11 Calle Baganza. So you see, your ending isn't true. It isn't artistic truth."
"What?" shouted Mr. Wallingham, springing up in the bed. "You dare to stand there and lecture me on artistic truth? Please remember to whom you're talking."
"Obviously the ending's inartistic. If you'll just look up Chapter 8 and observe the psychology of..."
Here the discussion grew confused, and Mr. Wallingham found himself at a disadvantage, for Perez knew a great many things about the psychology of the other characters and of Perez which had never occurred to the novelist. There was a tap at the door. Mr. Wallingham's valet came in and said, "Your bath is ready, sir," then withdrew, Perez being obviously invisible to him.
"All right," said Perez. "Go and have your bath. I know you think best in the bath."
"But," he added threateningly, "I'll come back." He began to grow faint.
"I'll teach you artistic truth."
Mr. Wallingham, said Miss Medhurst, as she buttoned her gloves prior to going out to lunch, "please don't think me impertinent, but I'm sure you're working too hard."
"You mean that my work is not up to standard?"
"Oh, I don't mean anything of the kind," protested the little spinster. "I think you're wonderful. Only I thought yesterday and again this morning, well, you know, you had to stop dictating and..."
"Yes, I know, I know." Mr. Wallingham had indeed been paralysed for several minutes, while Perez stood behind Miss Medhurst's chair and made ferocious faces.
When at last Mr. Wallingham decided to affront him, and trembling resumed an incoherent dictation, Perez punctuated every other sentence with loud cries of "Rot!" while Miss Medhurst shrank from her author's livid face. "Inspiration," she thought, "is a beautiful, terrible thing." The days that followed brought no improvement in Mr. Wallingham's condition. Perez had begun by appearing twice in one day. Within a week, he took to materializing every 4 hours or so.
"I say, Wally, old boy," he remarked, "this materializing isn't as difficult as it looks. In time, I may be able to keep it up day and night, and then I swear I'll never leave you at all."
Soon Mr. Wallingham realized that Perez was right. He appeared in the park and followed his author all the way to the publisher, arguing incessantly. He was beginning to develop theories.
"You've made a mess of the whole thing," he said. "On thinking it over carefully, I don't think I should have killed Pepita before eloping with Ines. As for Isabel, I rather think I shot her father, so you should say in Chapter 5.
As the days passed, the author felt a dull brutalization creep over him. His ruddy color was leaving him, and his waistcoat began to sag. Miss Medhurst fluttered about him. "Tell me what's the matter," she implored. Mr. Wallingham looked at her wildly. Perhaps something of her immense tenderness touched him, for he suddenly spoke.
"Don't think me mad. I don't know what to do. It keeps following me about and arguing."
The horror of the past few days was released as he told Miss Medhurst everything. Gripping the wiry little hand that trembled and yielded, he cried out as a child.
"Oh, I'm right, I'm right. Tell me I'm right."
"Yes," whispered Miss Medhurst. "Of course you're right. Who can teach you anything? Don't alter your novel. It doesn't belong to you. It belongs to humanity." This was terrible, she thought. The man chosen of the muses was dying before her eyes. Worse, his reason was dying because of a wretched illusion. Oh, if only she could take it upon herself. Aghast at her audacity, she put her hand on the stricken man's shoulder. "Mr. Wallingham," she whispered, "do you hear me? It is an illusion. Do you understand? It is an illusion."
"Yes," said the novelist.
"Then if it is an illusion, let us face it. Prove to yourself that it is only an illusion."
"Prove?" uttered Mr. Wallingham. "How?"
"He said he lived in Mexico, that he kept a saloon. Well, go and see. Go to Mexico."
"Go to Mexico?" shouted Mr. Wallingham.
"Yes, go. Go and see. When you get there, very likely you'll find a bank at the address he gave you, and then you'll know it was only an illusion. You'll be free." Mr. Wallingham thought for a long time, then gently took her hand and said,
"Perhaps you're right, but don't let me go alone. Come with me."
A sickly man wrapped in a travelling bag staggered onto the platform, hanging with a curious air of helplessness to the arm of a slim, capable little woman. Behind them, in procession, came several swarthy porters laden with baggage. The commissionaire of the Hotel de las Cuatro Naciones, disguised as a full general, led the way. The little woman erupted into the Spanish she had acquired on board ship, directed the porters to wait with the equipage, gave the commissionaire 5 pesos to help the heavy luggage through customs, and gently led the grey-faced man to the waiting omnibus. "Now, Mr. Wallingham," she said briskly half an hour later, "you must stay in bed and rest. Nothing can be done today. First you must sleep."
"All right," said Mr. Wallingham wearily. He shut his eyes.
With a sudden fond gesture, Miss Medhurst smoothed the creases from the pillow and left the room. She stayed only a few minutes longer, just long enough to wash her thin, intelligent face and to smile as she powdered her nose, for this was a new habit. For a moment on the steps of the hotel, she shrank from the broad expanse of the plaza. Then she clenched her fist and called a cab.
Her course was fixed in advance. The driver must carry her to a church selected from the plan of Mexico City and must inevitably pass through the Calle Braganza. She would not arouse suspicion by naming the Street of Doom. Her excitement was so powerful that the broad white streets became to her mere symbols. She saw only the nameplates, Calle de Tampico, Calle de Santa Fe, then at last Calle Braganza. 27, 25, a little street of old, mean houses. 19, a dog rooting in a dustbin. 13. She passed number 11, was conscious horribly of the bush over the door. Indeed, it was not a bank, but a little bar. Miss Medhurst stopped the driver by a violent tug at the coattail, leapt out and ran back. As she stared into the little bar, for a moment she could see nothing through the dirty panes. Then a shape. Miss Medhurst tottered as she walked away. She had recognized the tall, dark man with the soft eyes and the black beard. All through the night, Miss Medhurst tossed in the high Spanish bed. Perez! It was Perez! When morning came, she was paler than Mr. Wallingham. As she entered his room, he was speaking to the shade, and for a moment she thought that she, too, could now glimpse Perez against the flowered curtain. Mad! Both mad! But a savage purpose told her to gain time, to make Mr. Wallingham dress, to drive him wildly through the town into the suburbs, only to gain time to think. The novelist did not resist, seemed to have lost even the desire to hasten to the place of trial or to flee from it. Obediently, when lunch was done, he lay down for a siesta. All he said was, "If you're going out, remember this is Mexico, and take your revolver." He had given her the weapon and loaded it himself, for Mr. Wallingham's novels were slightly sensational, and he expected life to equal them. Miss Medhurst went out into the heat that struck up from the stones. She remembered Mr. Wallingham's metaphor, like a heavy hand. She sped through the desert streets, a grim, earnest little figure, careless of sights, on the route of yesterday. At the corner of Calle Braganza she paused, then ran. Number 11 stood open, and without an apparent tremor she went in. As her eyes, sun-blinded, recovered sight, she took in the few details, the wooden tables, the few iron chairs, the counter, the armchair on which slumbered a man of destiny. Her limbs shook, but Miss Medhurst rapped a table with her knuckles until Perez half opened his eyes. "Te," she said harshly, "con leche." Perez stared at her. "Tea? With milk? At 2:30? He expressed his view. Also, the mozo had gone home for a siesta. He was alone in the cafe. "Te con leche," snapped Miss Medhurst. Perez reflected that she was English, and therefore a lunatic, therefore also rich. After some time, he brought in an amazing vile liquid. The little spinster watched his face. "Am I mad?" she thought. Then, "No, it is he," and she drank the tea. She had nothing to say. This was the end, and yet she could not go. Time, gain time, she must. Desperately, she asked if this was an old inn. "No sé," replied Perez sleepily. She found herself explaining that her employer was an antiquarian who studied old inns. Might she visit the inn? Perez was about to refuse, but observed in Miss Medhurst's hand a 20 pesos note. "Lunatic," he thought. He shrugged his shoulders and led the way up steep wooden steps. They stood in a dark, shuttered bedroom. A carved oak chest ran up to the black beams. On the mantelpiece stood a cheap statuette of a saint. In an alcove she saw the high white bed. "The carpet," said Perez, proudly pointing to the horror from Brussels, "is new." He turned to her, smiling. She did not know what had happened. She did not know what she did. She heard a shot, a cry, found herself laughing and crying on her knees by the side of the man she had slain, found her tiny strength
tenfold multiplied as she hauled him to the bed, set upon the pillow the limp head. Before she fled through the lonely, brilliant streets, she thrust the revolver into the relaxed hand. She found Mr. Wallingham up and excited.
"Where have you been all this time?" he cried crossly. "That feels so funny. I was talking to him a quarter of an hour ago. He vanished in the middle of a word. Oh, I feel so ill."
"Come with me," said Miss Medhurst firmly. "Come now.
Quick, hurry."
Her new cunning told her to make him walk to arouse no notice. That cunning led her and her trembling charge into the bar where a dirty mozo now sat and smoked. It told her to make her scanty Spanish incomprehensible, until at last the mozo said he must fetch his master. He called up the wooden stairs. Miss Medhurst's fingers entered like claws into Mr. Wallingham's arm. There was no reply.
"Señor!"
called the mozo again. Again, no reply. The man's feet sounded loud as he went up the stairs. A moment later they heard him cry out, and as if drawn by a predominant will, they ran up the stairs.
"Oh!"
screamed the waiter. But there was no horror in Mr. Wallingham's face. With enraptured eyes he gazed at the long, red-sashed body, at the black beard that stood erect, outlined against the pillow. Colour rushed into his cheeks. He looked erect, confident in his fame.
"I was right," he cried. "It was artistic truth."
His voice rose. He shouted into a realm now devoid of phantoms.
"I was right, artistically right."